Blog Talk Radio.
Titled Six Criteria for Your Success. And one of the reasons we want to talk about criteria for success is very simple. That if you don't think about or plan for your success, then what's going to happen to you in the future? We have to have a plan in place. Just thinking about it is not going to make it happen. You have to have a plan. You have to use the laws of attraction to put out the energy and the effort to make sure that you as an entrepreneur have the opportunity to achieve those things that you truly want in life. So it is up to you to make the decisions on whether or not you will succeed. In the late 1990s, while most people my age, like Craig, were taking the traditional college route to success, I set out on a cross-country educational journey. From Portland, Oregon to Buffalo, New York, I crisscrossed the country working for a variety of unique entrepreneurs. It was from these business owners that I learned more than any college education ever could have provided. It was on this journey that I discovered the true criteria of success. And let me talk about that. In college, you learn all the theories about why things have to work, but you don't get the practical experience of what makes things work. That you get on the job training. That's why in certain fields, before you graduate, you have to actually have experience in the field, whether it's counseling, whether it's a doctor, certain professions. If you're not actually working on the real patient and making sure that you are making the right decisions for that individual, it would be easy for you to make mistakes and to do things to create the opportunity for yourself to fail. And it's also a matter of what are the practical things. Theory work is theory, but the practicality of everything works differently. So what we want you to do is think about how you can use everything that can help you create the opportunity for success. It was from these business owners that I learned more than any college education ever could have provided. It was on the job journey that I discovered the true criteria for success. As a serial entrepreneur, I'm regularly evaluating new business ideas, whether these ideas involve launching a new company or adding a new product line to an existing company. I try to evaluate the opportunity based upon six criteria. Okay, and there's a show on called Shark Tank, where if you have a business and you need financial backing to take it to the next level, then you go before this group and you pitch to them why they need to invest in you and your product. Because if they believe in you, if they believe in your product, then it takes you to the next level. But it doesn't mean that you can't figure out a way to raise the funds you need. Because usually, and even if you look back on Steve Jobs, when he first started Apple, He was good at startups. He was an innovator of products. But he got it up to a certain level, but he couldn't take it to the next level. And they brought in someone else to take over the company, and eventually he was kicked out of the company. But then the company became very complacent and were about to go out of business. So they brought Steve Jobs back, and then eventually he became head of his own company again. But what made Apple the success it is today is the innovation, the creativity that Steve Jobs had, because he came up with the iPad, the iPhone. He's even talking about an Apple TV now that actually was his concept, but because of his death, he has not been involved with, but the blueprint was already there. So as you can see, it takes multiple ways to do things to create an opportunity to be successful. But if you are not aware of what it takes to get to the success that you want, then you need to go back and read and learn from some of the scholars on what it takes to be successful. Criteria number one, can you clearly define the market and direction my advertising efforts to target the prospect with laser-like precision? One of my companies sells a product designed specifically for certified public accountants. It solves a real problem and is a very good product and a fair price. That's great, but I'm far from concerned with and excited by the fact that we have exactly who our customer is. We know exactly how to reach them. We know how to talk to them so that our message will resonate, and we know that when precisely they're most welcome to our message. Most business and product ideas are vague, and it's a classic mistake of new entrepreneurs to think that their great product should appear to everyone. Even worse, it's easy to assume great products sell themselves. I assure you that doesn't happen. Great products can languish while mediocre products become blockbusters, so long as the mediocre product has a clearly defined audience who is easily reachable through the measurable advertising. And why is that important? Well, let's investigate that a little bit. But so many of us, we just don't realize. We think, oh, if we write a book, everyone will read it. Well, unless your book addresses issues that a specific group needs, and if you know where they hang out and you know what message you need to put out, and that's where having a creative writer, someone that knows how to write and direct the message directly to your market comes in. So we need to look at and we need to explore and we need to plan. You cannot have a successful business without a plan in place. Criteria two, does the idea solve a real problem? Back in 2010, venture capitalists dumped $1.67 billion into social media companies. I don't have any major objection to social media companies, but I have a hard time seeing how most of these companies solve any real problem. Let's look at one example. Color, a mobile photo sharing app, raised $41 million in venture money before launching. Okay, Color might be a cool little app, but it's a big stretch to say it solved a real problem and made people's lives better, which, by the way, explains why it failed. When you're adding value to the world and solving real problems, it's generally much easier to come up with a worthwhile strategy to make money.
This all reminds me, in 1999, at the dot-com bubble, it was there in the trenches and made several huge mistakes, which ultimately cost me everything I'd accumulated up until that point. It was a humbling learning experience for me, but a great reminder that as an entrepreneur, my primary objective is to create value in solving real problems. And let me tell you what some of what happened in 1999 and the dot-com era and bubble. That was right around the time that you had the Y2K problem, or rather, that was when we were going from the 1900s to the 2000s. And what happened was that people were fearful that their computers would crash when we turned into the new century. So what happened was that you had a lot of people who had left IBM during the late 80s and 90s, when they started to cut back into corporations because they had 3 to 4 people handling the same job because companies had merged. And what happened was you had a lot of talent, and these people basically fed into the news, and the news created a hype on how computers were going to crash. And so you had these people who could solve a problem. They could go out and they could work on your computers to help guarantee that your computer would not crash. So, and they charged exorbitant prices for their services. And there was nothing to back up the product or the service. And the dot-com era was the beginning of websites. And today, if you're in business, you have to have a website. Every business, every department store has a website today. And now those websites are a whole lot more friendly. And even today, if you want to buy a product in the store, you can go online to make sure that they have the product. And then all you have to do is order it and have it on hold. So when you're in the store, all you have to do is go and pick it up. So today, things have changed, but that era was the era when a lot of things failed, but on those failures came a lot of learning and a lot of growth and a lot of change in how we look at things today. Criteria number 3. Is it scalable? As a child with an entrepreneurial inclination, I looked around for things I could sell or services I could provide. Not knowing where to start, I went for the low-hanging fruit by trading my time for money. My ventures included Kool-Aid stands, paper routes, and selling little crystals from a broken chandelier and my classmates 10 cents each for 3 for a quarter. I did okay as a kid by being a little creature and working my butt off. But everything changed for me when I was 19 years old and when I came to understand scalability. Trading your time for money is a devil's bargain. It is the easiest way to bring in income, but in the end, it is still a job. The ability to scale means you have, obviously, leverage. You don't have to do all the work. And when you do, your efforts are multiplied significantly. That's one of the things I like most about publishing business. It takes about same amount of energy to communicate with 10 people as it does with a million. Look for businesses that can be systematized, grown through good marketing, and with large
enough target market that the whole exercise proves a worth of effort. So, and today, companies are hiring, but they are not going through brick-and-mortar stores to sell their products. What they have is software, and they can go and sell their software through a department store like Hi-Fi Buy, Radio Shack, or any of the electronic stores or Office Depot, Office Max, whatever. The problem is that, guess what? Their products will be astronomical in price. If they set up a website and promote it through word-of-mouth advertising using distributors or affiliates who already want to use their product and will pay for it to be licensed to them, and then what they do is they reinvest that money, but this way, instead of reaching 10,000 through millions of dollars of advertising, it may cost them about maybe $1,000, and they can reach 100,000 people. Because if I'm an affiliate and I'm using your product, and I know 10 people who can use your product, and I sign them up as distributors or affiliates, then I earn a percentage off of what they do, and what they pay their monthly fee for the product. So as you can see, it's a way of advertising that allows people to work and earn money from home today. And I remember being in Atlanta during the time of the Olympics, and they kept building and building with the idea that by 2030, they would utilize all of these buildings. They did not plan for the change of technology of the future. So guess what? All of these buildings that they built, half of them are vacant because companies are not having to grow. Think about it. Every corporation, like Apple, Comcast, Amazon, every one of these people have a customer service department. But guess what? Those customer service people do not work in their office. What they do is they go through tech agencies where they will post job openings, and people will sign up for and get trained by the tech agency. And then once the training is finished, then they will agree to work a minimum of so many hours a month, but they can work as many hours as they choose. And with the software today, all the company has to do is supply the computer and the phone. And then all you have to do is get the internet service, and they reroute everything into your home. And you are their employee, but you are not working directly in their office. It is such a completely different market than your fathers and your forefathers ever foresaw in the last century. That is why we need to look at how technology influences the job market and how we can adapt to those changes and how we can set up a plan on how we will incorporate all of that into how we do business today. Criteria number four. Is there a special advantage that I can leverage? People are often surprised that I'm not a competitive person. I don't care if you're better at something than I am. I do, however, care deeply about outcomes and objectives. For whatever reason, there are certain things I want to see happen. And the fact is, I prefer to take the shortcuts to reach those objectives.
I always look for ways to gain special advantage in any new opportunity, and you should too. Here's an example of one relating to the CPA product I described earlier. I would never consider adding this product to the existing business if I didn't have a special advantage up my sleeve. In this case, we happen to have a very close relationship with a pair of high-ranking, well-respected university professors who are already in this space. These folks are at the top of their game with all the credibility in the market we can hope for, leveraging their massive credibility and expertise that this particular opportunity is easy to, and it really does feel like cheating. When evaluating your opportunity, ask yourself these questions. How can I leverage my current customer base to support this new opportunity? Do I have anyone who has a unique expertise that I can leverage to make this a home run? How that relates to what you're going and what I just talked about is, in, as an affiliate, people, you got to remember, you do not look at everyone and anyone as your potential customer. You have to be able to zero in who is your customer, who, where do they hang out, and how will this product benefit them? If you can answer that, then you will know whether or not they are your specific customer that you need to reach. Criteria number 5, does it fit within core objectives? After losing everything in 2000, my primary objective was to rebuild and add to my wealth. I started a marketing company built around generating leads online. That business grew quickly from there and branched off into software development, where we created and marketed our own products. The products we made were good and they solved problems, but the only reason I launched them was because I thought they could put lots of money in my pocket. There's nothing wrong with making money. In fact, there's a lot right about making money. And at the time, building and launching those new products helped to support my primary objective, rebuild and add to my wealth. Today, however, there is no way I could pursue projects like that simply because my core objectives are fundamentally different than they were back then. Making money is important to me, but I have other objectives that override that one all the time. Before I launch any new business or product, I ask myself if this product fits within the vision I have for my life. If this is how I want to spend my time, does this get me closer to my medium and long-term objectives? Criteria number 6, can I build an immediate feedback loop by defining and watching key numbers? I'll probably never be the guy that comes up with an idea that changes the world or builds a business that revolutionizes anything. That's the downside of criteria number 6. Fortunately, the upside makes up for it. Our time is the most valuable asset we have. The worst case scenario for an entrepreneur is to waste their time and priceless energy on a business that will not succeed. How do you know if an opportunity will be successful? Start with the criteria above to select the businesses you start or the opportunities that you pursue, and you'll dramatically increase your odds of success. Add to this a good feedback loop, and you'll know quickly and with relatively low risk whether the business will succeed. 3 years ago, I spoke in Lithuania at an annual leadership and entrepreneurship camp designed for university students from all over the world. As part of the sessions, we had students pick individual business ideas and break into teams to actually work on how they would implement the ideas. One of their tasks was to divide some key numbers in their business that would help them understand the relative health of the business at a moment's notice. These key numbers create the feedback loop we need in order to know if we're going in the wrong direction. In most businesses, developing feedback loop is straightforward. I like to identify some key numbers in the business and watch those numbers every day. As the business grows, the numbers you're watching will likely change. But that's not the point. Most entrepreneurs don't bother establishing key numbers for these businesses, or they do not. If they do, often focus on things that are too far away than the objectives of the business to make much of a difference. That's one of the things that we focus on when members of our LEAP virtual mastermind. And what that means is if you are in a mastermind group, what does that do? That helps you come up with ways to be successful, ways to set up and do the things that you need to do to help you build a business. But you know, what I learned, I can help you with. What you learned, you can help me with, because we each have expertise. We each have ideas that work for each of us. So it's a matter of understanding and knowing how to incorporate all of these things to help you grow and build a successful business all the way around. It is up to you to decide how you plan on growing your business in the future and where you want to be. And remember, you can go to my website, and that website is the number one, personalcareercoach.com. And we offer both individual and group counseling, and we can help you put together a strategy that can help you build your business into the future and help you come up with strategies that can help you grow and teach you how to learn from your mistakes so that in the future you will have a long business.